New York Real Talk with Pamela Sue Mann, Alex Lefchuk, and some incredibly inspiring guest co-presenters from the city that never sleeps via Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
New York Real Talk continues its adventures, and this time around, for the first time in its history, none of the co-hosts are actually in New York at all, because Pamela Sue Mann, normally in New York, is actually in Massachusetts. Welcome, obviously, to your program, Pam. How are you?
I'm great. I just seem to have lost the screen, but that's okay. I'm keeping you all in my mind's eye.
Okay. We can see you, Pam. Don't worry. That's the important thing. We can see you, all as well with the world. And of course, we've got the wonderful Gemma Joy from my neck of the woods. In fact, actually, Gemma and myself are separated at present by probably only about 12 miles, I think, maximum 12 miles, really. I'm in Middlesbrough, you're in Gisborough, so it must be 10 or so miles, maximum, that sort of point of view. So pretty much the closest. I could cycle it, but I'm not going to. So there we are, because the program would go on that sort of basis. We'd be hopefully joined by Sarah Huntley, but Gemma, I want to come to yourself, because when I sort of said, come and join us on NYRT, you said, sure. And then you sent me another one saying, what's NYRT? And I said, it's New York Real Talk. And I didn't say anything else other than that, because I figured, you know, it's all right. You know the way I work. I mean, when did we first encounter each other, Gemma? Back in the 20th century, I think.
I knew you were going to say it was in a different century. Yes, I mean, technically it was in a different century. Actually, yes, it was.
Yeah, well, since then, I taught you before university, taught you during university. Who knows what goes on there? Got to ask the question, though. Politically, and I know you've been quite a political activist recently in terms of the Liberal Democrats and so on and so forth. You stood for Parliament in the last elections. Crazily, you weren't elected. You know, I still do not understand why that was the case, but never mind. That's the key thing. But what are your thoughts on the current state of play in terms of UK politics before we look at what's happening in Joe Biden land?
Disconcerting. I think people are, it's very disconcerting seeing the, so to update anybody who doesn't know UK politics, we have ousted the former Prime Minister, who is now caretaking and sitting around. I'm not sure what he's doing. I think he had a little bit of a party, but that's kind of his shtick, if you like. And we have two contenders now who are vying for the next leader. And the choice between them, somebody described, it wasn't me, as the choice between which festival toilet you pick, of which festival Portaloo you pick. I think that's probably, in a nutshell, encapsulates what a lot of non-Conservative voters are seeing, and possibly it's their worst election broadcast that they could have even done for a party political broadcast, because it's now being broadcast to everybody. But actually what they're trying to do is appeal to their own voting members who are a particular base audience. So what they're doing there is really great stuff by pulling each other apart. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of the equivalent. I mean, I know, Pamela, I spoke to other Americans that said, oh, we have a vice president. Well, that's irrelevant. You know, this is a bit like during the kind of current situation, Joe Biden is effectively sort of has to step down. And rather than Kamala Harris actually taking over, there needs to be a sort of, you know, anybody can actually stand. In fact, it seemed as though most of the Conservative Party were actually standing at one stage. Nine candidates whittled down gradually over the basis to two. And I suppose that's democracy. So there you go. It's interesting times. Still good news. At least England have won the European Championships as far as the women's team are concerned. So that was great news for the sporting England. And again, that was something else, Gemma, which I thought shows a kind of progress, because you were also banned from playing football as a child, I believe.
I was as a child. So my daughter is now 10. She'll be 11 in November. And at her age, I played football, proper jumpers for goalposts things, where you put your jumper down and that was your goalpost. I'm not saying we were poor, but this is like a Dudley Moore sketch where, you know, no one is as poor as we lived in a shoebox. But we wanted to play at school and we followed all the teams and we weren't allowed. We were only allowed to play netball, because that's what girls did. Girls played netball. I know in the US that soccer and women's soccer is far beyond what we are, and we're getting there. But my daughter now plays for a grassroots local club and all girls, and the under 12s, and she loves it. And honestly, I could harp on all day about the joy my heart feels when I watch them all play. And now they've got some real icons to live up to. So the talk on Monday at training was, did you see Beth Mead and did you see Kelly? And it was just great that they've got females to look up to who are like them.
Fantastic.
Role models. So there we are, Pam. That's given you a whole range of things to actually sort of follow through. What questions would you like?
Back. I lost you on the screen. Just got you back. Persistence paid off. Yeah.
Exactly. Persistence usually does. So what questions would you like to put to Gemma? I mean, in fact, actually, Gemma, have you ever been to New York?
No, I've never been. It's on my list of places to go. Absolutely on my list of places to go, but I haven't been yet. Any recommendations?
Well, first of all, as soon as you get off the plane, start talking to people because they're going to be so charmed by your accent that you could get anything you want. You could get free drinks. It's endless, you know, the possibilities for you, just given your gorgeous accent.
Pamela, I don't think that people will think through the relative negatives of offering free drinks to somebody from the northeast of England. I think they might want to rework that policy.
So I want to ask you this because my husband Jerry was just in Yorkshire. So how far are you from there?
That's debatable. Some people say we are in Yorkshire. So we used to be part of Yorkshire called North Yorkshire, and then boundaries geographically changed. So some people say we are out of Yorkshire, and we have just celebrated yesterday Yorkshire Day. So we're technically in part of it.
What is Yorkshire Day? I am an ignorant American. I know nothing about it.
Really happens. There's a flag that waves, and other than that, life just goes on as normal because Yorkshire folk are very stoic and they just crack on. They don't make a fuss, they just crack on.
So I have this very sort of Father Ted image, although it's not Ireland, it's England, of, you know, the flag going up and everyone going, yay, hooray, and then that's about it.
You've absolutely nailed it. That's exactly what happens. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, he's in Yorkshire, or he was just in Yorkshire with Suzanne Vega playing. So I'm not sure if you heard about a show happening, but it was in your neighborhood. I think it's done now. Amazing. It's hard to keep up. Well, he's just, you know, Alex, like he just goes from here to there to there. It's really hard to keep up with it. We're just where he is. But yeah, I think he really loved it. He was in a field. That's all I knew. He was in a field.
Sounds Yorkshire-ish, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to a field very shortly. We're going to the field, which is the York Maze, and that'll be the Europe's largest maze, because we're back at the York Maze very shortly, actually. And Gemma, you must return to that. But we've been joined by another young lady who's not basically from Yorkshire. She's very much home counties, and I know we've worked on a whole variety of projects. But again, this is also her first New York Real Talk. Welcome, Sarah Huntley. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for inviting me. Lovely to be on the show.
We've got to ask the question before, of course, Pamela puts the forensic interviewing skills to the whole system. Have you ever been to New York? Because Gemma, we found out, hasn't been to New York as yet. But what about yourself?
Yes, I have been to New York a very long time ago. I'd love to go again. But yes, I went to see the... Don't know what year it was. It was when the film The Fisher King was out.
So 1980s.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. And we'll be asking
there we have it, Pamela.
Yeah.
Sarah, wonderful Lambda tutor, actress, has been to New York, but never stood for Parliament. Gemma Joy has stood for Parliament, but never been to New York. Let it not be said we haven't got a diamond cast for this edition of New York Real Talk. Over to you, Pamela.
Well, Sarah, you know, as in true New York Real Talk fashion, I'm completely unprepared, but I like to do that because it gives sort of an edge to everything. But I'm so curious as to how you got into the calling of the thespian.
Calling of the thespian, Sarah.
Calling of the thespian. Well, Pamela, that sounds like a book.
I had to be really careful not to mispronounce the word because I am American. And then they will say this.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Thespian.
You know,
yeah.
Well, actually, I had an aunt who I adored who was slightly mad and rather wonderful. And she was an actress. And I wasn't, whenever I was with Auntie Anne, I always had fun. And so I would, as a little girl, go to the theatre with her. And I was always really curious about, it was really exciting to go on stage on the set before the show started and that kind of thing. And my mum was a stage manager. So I suppose I was always interested in theatre. And Alex, and you won't believe me, but I was actually quite shy when I was little. So my mum decided to send me to Lambda classes so that I became more confident in communication, I suppose, and talking to people. And that's where it all went wrong. I liked it all too much. I wasn't very good at school. I really enjoyed acting. Not that I thought I was particularly good at it, but it was the thing that floated my boat and the thing I really enjoyed. So then I auditioned for the National Youth Theatre, which was run by Michael Croft back in the day. And I didn't get in, and I was really, really, really upset about that. But then actually, I then went to the National Theatre where they were doing a course there, which was probably more exciting and more fun. So when I was 16, I did that course, and then I was just, the bug had hit me. It was a wonderful summer. I spent the whole summer at the National. And we did a show in the Cottesloe, which is now renamed. I'm so old. And then after that, I had a group of friends, I suppose, that were involved. And then after that, I auditioned for drama school and I got into two, but I chose to go to the Drama Centre, which in fact I was at on Sunday because it was the closing of an era. And talking about my lovely New York friends, they had everybody from group one through to group 58, and I was group 21. But the reason I'm telling you that is Doreen Cannon, who studied under Lee Strasberg and was very well known for method teaching via Stanislavski, was one of my teachers. And so on Sunday, there were these young people from group 58 going, oh my goodness, did you have Doreen Cannon? Yes. Did you have Yap Malgrim? Yes. Did you have Christopher Hobbs? So it was quite a lot of influence, Pamela, actually from New York, and Reuven Adiv, who did Stanislavski style method, coming through from Lee Strasberg. But I'm very good. I'm not very good at American, but I do remember Doreen Cannon. She was very intense, really lovely. And she'd say, okay, what are you going for? Because before you got up to do any acting exercise, or any part, you had to say what your character's objective was and the three activities. I can remember one day feeling very tired, and I was doing something, and she went, you're going for evil? How can you be going for evil? And it's just stupid, I was just tired. But she was very good, very lovely lady. And so that's really my story of why I got into acting. And I just love it. I know that she also wants to tread the boards, as we say over here.
Oh, yeah, she's done a bit of that, yeah. It's fascinating because I think probably in that you found maybe your people, you found your tribe, you found all these other, people who are not, quote unquote, so completely normate, as is a new term, but you were able to meet other people who were unicorns.
Yes. Well, yes, I think so. And I think, sorry to bang on, I talk too much, but what was very moving at this end of an era, which was quite amazing because we met back in the original building in Chalk Farm, where it was in this disused church, and Simon Callow got up because he was one of, I think he was group three or four, and they had some very interesting actors, Jack Shepherd, who I worked with, I didn't particularly like. I went up to him and said, oh, do you remember me in Wycliffe? And he said, oh, I played his assistant. He went, I remember your face. He was group six. But I think Simon Callow said it, that for most people that went to Drama Centre, it was a way of being as well as a way of training, and the ghosts that were in that room of all the things that we'd all encountered and the stress and the strain and the good times and the bad times, but the bonding of everybody from group one to group 58 was immense, with the fact that you're always striving, you are always working, you're always challenging yourself, be that whether it comes out in television, acting, theatre, teaching, directing. And it's a discipline to challenge yourself. And people may disagree violently within the group, but everybody has has that bond, and that's why there were so many people there. And yeah, I think everybody agreed, including Simon Cullen, the day they walked through Drama Centre, their lives changed, and mine definitely did. And I think mine is, it's not so much to do with acting as that you do have to suffer to gain sometimes, because I remember sometimes afterwards and I got some nice jobs and they go, it's all right to enjoy yourself, you know.
Enjoying yourself.
I do. I put myself immensely with you. Anyway, enough of me. That's me. But I am proud, and proud is the wrong word, but I was privileged, very privileged, to be at Drama Centre, and it's now officially. But it will live on. It will live on in all the people that went there.
Aww.
Gemma, do you feel as though you were proud and privileged to be at the University of Humberside, which of course has metamorphosed into the University of Lincoln?
Yeah, I was. I think I learned so much at university, and I think it's a complete rite of passage. I'm at the point where my daughter is now in her final year of A-levels and deciding whether to go to university or do anything else. And I'm sort of old school and trying to persuade her that university's not just for the academic things that you learn, is such an important part of life, and that she will miss out if she doesn't go, and particularly a university where she has to live somewhere else, because that is part of it. I'm facing an uphill challenge and to try and convince her, but yeah, I'm so pleased I went to university. And I actually, over lockdown, reconnected after years and years and years with some of the people that I shared a house with, which in my head wasn't that long ago, but it was in the early 90s, so I guess it was. And yeah, it was really nice to find that the directions that we'd all travelled in were completely different. But yeah, I'm recommending it to her. Whether she'll go to Lincolnshire or Humberside, I don't know.
Sorry, there are other universities? I'm not aware of this. I thought there was only one.
Apparently there are some, but I don't think they're very good.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard tell of Oxford and Cambridge, but they were just sort of, you know, fly-by-nights in all sorts of ways. As I frequently said, Lincoln actually would have been the second university in England had money not been tight and the various people went after setting up Oxford to Cambridge instead. It's just a matter of case. There we are. Cost of living crisis.
Cambridge. Jerry was just in Cambridge as well. I don't know where they played, but I know they're in Cambridge because we had been in Cambridge. And I said, oh, you're in Cambridge. You're so lucky. It's so beautiful there. Isn't it? Yeah. what you were saying, Sarah, it was ringing a bell with me, because I think anyone in any walk of life who really finds the soul and the passion of what they do and they feel that that's their home, whatever it is, when you meet others that have that same obsession or that same, they feel like a belonging in that room because that is their world, that is their universe. There's that moment of going, yes, you know, because, you know, in the arts and in many other things, but definitely I could equate my experience with music with your experience of acting and the study, is that you do push yourself. You are vulnerable. You have to be real. You continue to open those doors, or as I say, to open the ugly closet, because, you know, inside you're like, but you're faced with a choice, go there or don't go there. And if you go there, you realize, number one, it's not all so ugly and scary, and you can embody that and have a cathartic experience, even a religious, spiritual experience. But that gains wisdom, and that wisdom is another bedrock on which you can climb to enlightenment eventually. I didn't mean to go there, but I think
you're in Massachusetts, Pam. You're at a funeral in Massachusetts. If that's not a way to actually ease your way through the whole process, you know, again, congratulations. It's the first New York Real Talk we've actually gone with somebody who's actually been at a funeral and done the show as well. It's very impressive.
Oh, Pamela, I'm sorry.
Oh, yes.
What, for doing the show, Sarah? No, it's part and parcel of the whole thing. It was her idea.
I'm with some incredibly lovely family, and it's a very large family, so I was a little afraid that some of the festivities, because they are celebrating the life of this incredible woman, Ellie, who parented all of these people and grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren, and it's just an incredible testament to her life. But in keep, you know, in keeping with that, they're very celebratory people. So I was a little afraid that the sound exuberance would spill over into this room. But so far, we're doing okay, I think.
But I think Gemma and you and I and Alexis are all probably saying the same thing, that it's very important, not just about studying, but to find yourself as a person and to leave home and to have those experiences and to have a family of people around you that go through certain experiences with you, good, bad, terrible, funny. I mean, most people at Drama Centre, it was really funny. They were recounting terrible stories of people. And one of mine was, I wasn't the most academic, and some people had come on this course from university. So it wasn't like everybody was 18, 19. And I was, they told me to go around the world and gain some experience. And then I went back and re-auditioned. So I was about, I don't know, almost 19, 20 when I went. And I thought when they were talking about the Oedipus complex, it was a complaint. I didn't realise it was some, you know, whatever. And but the worst thing was they had this terrible thing.
It wasn't exactly wrong, sir. It was a complaint. It was just a mother-son complaint, basically. That's the sort of problem from that point of view.
I mean, I'm sure you three and listeners can relate to this, where you're in a group and there's lots of different energy levels going on and a bit of hostility, and then a few people fancy people and then they don't. And then all that tension going on, as well as the stress. And we used to do really, really long hours, incredibly long hours. And we didn't have, I mean, all this thing about people worrying about what food they're eating. There was no canteen. There was just like a coffee machine and that was it. And this lady that used to make flapjacks. And the thing was, you'd get so hungry by 7:30. But if you had one of Eva's flapjacks, that's it, you need to be constipated for 3 days. But the point was, by 7:30, you were so hungry, you wanted to eat a chair. So you think, okay. And we really didn't actually have much money at all to go, oh, I'll have one of Eva's flapjacks. And but that was the food, that was nothing. But what they used to do was, Christopher Fetters was this most scary, scary man who was the principal. And he had this way of, when you spoke to him, asking a question or something, you just go, no. And I really didn't know that was a yes or no. And I said, I'm sorry, Christopher, was that a yes or a no? And he went, no, like this. I was like, he's always smoking a cigarette like that. And I'd come from quite a small girls' school and I was amazed. Sorry, I'm going to be a bit rude, but I said something and he went, well, this one clear, tough titties. And I was so gobsmacked that somebody said that. But the worst thing was,
he was clearly an early feminist, Sarah.
He was loud now, but it was really reassuring to hear other people giving things. But quickly, I'll try and be succinct to the story. Each term, four people had to research a project, and you had then to get other people in your group to act out to show, you know, Roger or something, and these would be the most obscure playwrights. I remember going down to Swiss Cottage Library and they're going, oh, not another one. I need to do this. And I found it. Then I bought drinks to people at the pub. Please, please, can you do that? And then he knew that I was so out of my depth. And you had to spend the whole of the afternoon goes, oh, Miss Huntley, you will. And I'd got some Spanish playwright and I'm dyslexic. So I had got a playwright, but it wasn't the right playwright. But I was out by about two letters, but it was a Spanish one. I went, very interesting, really. So he let me go through the whole thing. And usually he'd be going, oh, rubbish, or something like that as we're going through. And it was horribly quiet. I thought, well, because it's going awfully well. And when we got to the end of like this three-quarter of an hour presentation, and I was just like, oh my God, thank God I've got through that. And he went, what was something? Very good. Fascinating. Wonderful. Just one problem. And I thought, oh God, I've done better than anyone in the whole of my year. Wrong playwright. And everybody went, oh, no, because I kept them up to like hours burning the midnight oils to try and do this. And to try and get everybody back to do the right one was just, so you had this thing and it's just very intense. It doesn't sound much now, but you could also get chucked out at any time. So everybody was constantly under that stress. So what was good yesterday was to hear some quite well-known people saying they had felt, including Simon Callow, absolutely terrified most of the time. And all these emotional memory exercises and things you had to do. You had so many from there anyway. But I think one of the things he did say, and I will shut up, was never, ever apologise for yourself. So when I've been in productions and plays and things that perhaps weren't that good, I've always had Christopher sitting on my shoulder saying, whatever. Never apologize to yourself, Sarah. And I think that's probably quite a good tip. But, you know, there we go. But I would, in hindsight, at almost 60, I would not give up those, that training. And I'm pleased I went there rather than Bristol. And the bond that I have with my group, of group 21, is people can be having a really bad time, like, you know, a funeral, lost a parent, or really brilliant things. And there's a bond. And I'm sure that's what you're trying to say to your daughter, Gemma, isn't it? That that bond goes beyond. I mean, my bond with Alexis goes beyond because of the history that we share, which is the thing that gets you, sorry to be very deep, but that is the thing that gets you through life.
That's what we want, Sarah. That's what our show is all about. Do you want to go deep? Just keep coming back here. Right, Alex?
That's what takes you through. When you lose a parent and you haven't got your initial family, or perhaps you're the top of your family, if you've got those roots and friendships, which I so hope my daughter will get, mm-hmm. Or funny stories that have happened with her friends at university, and I'm sure that's what Gemma's trying to hand on. That's the thing that gets you through a very dark night or a very boring day, or you know, and I'd say what's interesting about my group, if you're making a little film about it, I'd love to do that or write it down as a story. Everyone's had fantastic times, everyone's had rather rubbish times. Some people had three or four different partners, some people haven't had a partner, some people have had children, some people, but we are a group, we are one.
A mosaic, I think, is what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Gemma, any particular pieces of music you'd like us to squeeze into this, your debut New York Real Talk?
Oh, well, I was very happy this morning to hear that Pulp have reformed and put aside their differences, either musically or
Jarvis,
personally.
Jarvis, we love you.
So anything by Jarvis Cocker or Pulp would be great. So that's part of Yorkshire as well, actually, Pamela. That's part
Sheffield.
Of South Yorkshire.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Disco 2000?
Anything. Honestly, you couldn't pick a bad one.
By the fire.
And Sarah, a musical choice for yourself as we'll do a back-to-back before we do those two final questions.
Oh, gosh, I think it's just something to be, should be something to do with New York. Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I think we should have that.
That's brilliant.
So New York, New York then.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York, New city that never sleeps, and find I'm a number one, top of the list, king of the hill, a number one. These little town blues. A brand new start of it in old New York. And if I can make it there, I'm gonna make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York.
As well. A double header there, taking us neatly round, Pamela, to astonishingly those last two questions. We haven't had a chance to do a wacky New York story because actually Sarah and Gemma have not had their wacky New York moment as yet. So that's why we've been to move on from
I
that.
I believe that Sarah's probably had a wacky New York moment.
Oh, yeah, you're quite right, actually. Yes. Did you have a wacky New York moment, Sarah?
I did really. I am getting this right. The station is central, isn't it? The station
yes.
with the. Yeah. I quite had a wacky moment there.
Yeah.
I like that station very much. I'd love to go that, and I'd love to go back to park.
Would you like to share your wacky moment in about 90 seconds?
I think I have to. No, no. I have to do this wacky moment.
You know what? Next time. We'll do it. Yeah. There's just too much to say and too little time, Alex.
Too much. So, Pamela, would you like to throw those two standard questions in a New York style? Because let's face it, both Gemma and Sarah are used to, have they had a reasonably interesting Zoom? Are they coming back again? All the rest of the bits and pieces that come through there. Sarah, again, has indeed also experienced this from what I now believe actually should be a standard sort of line in which I actually sort of do get in touch with my inner spirit animal, which, as you know, actually helps tremendously. And I feel New York requires more pandas on the streets to actually keep itself going. But Pamela, last two questions from yourself, please.
More pandas in New York. Okay, starting with Sarah and then Gemma. Number one, I'm going to ask both questions and you can answer them both, if you don't mind, if you please. Number one, have you had a good time today with us?
I have had a very good time. I'm sorry I've nattered on too much. Yes, I've had a good time.
Oh, I love it. And number two, will you please come back soon?
I'd love to. I'd very much like to.
That's another thing we do in New York. And Sham?
Yes, I'm going to answer in a Yorkshire dialect. I've had a really good time, Pamela.
And will you come back soon?
Absolutely. That was just my accent. That's just not
right. Yes, oh, no, I love that accent. I could listen to it all day long. I'm going to go home. Well, yeah, I'm going to go home when I finally do go home and practice it.
Yeah, I could see actually sort of lots of citizens of New York when you respond by I've had a really good time here, really sort of wondering how wonderful, how charming that happens to be, especially if they're dressed as a panda, which is part and parcel of the whole thing. And Pamela, what would you recommend we should wrap up with as far as a Pamela Sue Mann piece of music is concerned for Sarah and Gemma? Should it be Pink Flamingos?
Oh, are we sick of that yet?
Gemma, have you heard Pink Flamingos? Sarah, have you heard Pink Flamingos? How could one be sick of Pink Flamingos?
I would like to.
Because you can actually, it's probably the only song of mine you could actually dance to. And you should dance to it because it's really fun. It's
exactly. Like, Pink Flamingos and coming up next. Pamela, New York, of course, is home of...
Okay, I know you will both understand this. Is New York home of the world's finest... pickle.
Like pink flamingos do. let's dance like pink flamingos do. And I will dance like me, and you will dance like you.
Well, the days of summer are with us. Some might say the dog days of summer are with us. But how do we actually ensure that our pets are involved in our daily lives? Because we want them to be involved with our daily lives, from celebrating birthdays to exercising with us, etc. They make us feel a lot better about ourselves. Well, we've got two fabulous souls to actually talk us through this. First of all, it's a welcome return to the Midweek Drive for the ace vet from, of course, Channel 4's SAS Who Dares Wins, the fabulous Ollie Ollerton. How are you, Ollie?
I'm really good, Alex. Thank you. Thanks for the introduction.
Excellent. We've also got a truly tremendous veterinary surgeon extraordinaire, Dr. Libby Sheridan. How are you, Libby?
Very good, Alex. Thanks for having us on.
Excellent. Now, this research by Purina Pro Plan has shown that we are opting to spend more quality time with our pets, with 60% of us actually enjoying exploring nature with our pets, exercising and so on and so forth. I mean, that's got to be good news, hasn't it, Libby?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We can be active with our pets and it's given them companionship. And in return, we get all that companionship and love as well. So it's so great. We've seen such a surge in pet ownership during lockdown and during COVID, you know, so we've got a lot more pets. But of course, you know, we want to ensure kind of we give them what they need. And part of that is companionship and time together and doing fun things together.
Ollie, from your own perspective, in terms of relationships with pets and so on, I mean, you're a dog owner, of course, from your own perspective. Is it a case of you like, you know, love me, love my dog, to be honest, as the old song goes?
Yeah, or and I don't care if you don't, because I absolutely adore my dog. So, yeah, we come as a package, to be quite honest. He's part of my daily life, my activity. I had cats and dogs and stuff growing up, but, you know, that bond that me and Murphy have is like nothing I've experienced before. So, but yeah, he's with us or with me, you know, training, going out training in the morning, to going to work, climbing mountains, you know, he's there constantly. So, you know, I mean, this research just proves what I already know. So, you know, it's really important that we start to understand that we don't want the unthinkable to happen. And we want to make sure that they live a long and happy life. And to really increase that long, happy life and that longevity is to make sure that they've got the right kind of exercise, the right kind of nutrition. And then, as I do with myself, you know, make sure they've got the supplements that support everything that, you know, their growth.
And Libby, that's a really critical part, because obviously if you're putting in poor quality fuel, you're not going to get a good responsive friend out of it, are you?
Yeah, absolutely right, Alex. So our pets all need, I mean, food is cornerstone to their health, really, you know, so they need a healthy, complete and well-balanced diet, you know, that's a good quality diet. And as well as that, kind of the exercise, whether that's a dog kind of going out for walks, and don't forget the cats in the house as well, you know, so they you know, you can stimulate their exercise too, you know, with the little cat trees they can climb up, and with the toys and so forth. And then we'll still, you know, even with doing that, then it's kind of anticipating what other needs they might have. And, you know, just like we might have periods in our lives where we go through a bit of bumps in the road, as it were, you know, it's the same for our pets, you know, so they might well be sort of going into kennels or into catteries or so forth. They might be like Ollie's dog Murphy, who's a Labrador, they'll be predisposed to joint disease, you know, so, you know, we want to be kind of looking after their joints too. You know, and maybe, you know, the summer, you know, skin gets drier and so forth, you know, so keeping kind of like a nice healthy skin balance as well. So it's anticipating those needs too, and then catering for those.
I mean, clearly taking any pet on board is a responsibility, even if that pet's a goldfish. And I always like to stand up for the goldfish as well, because nobody else can. Ollie, from your own perspective, when you decided to actually get a Labrador, presumably you were well aware that this was a long-term commitment.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, one thing that happened when we got Murphy, we got him from his breeder, and It was almost like an SAS interrogation. It took me back to my days on selection. Some of the questions and, you know, about the dog's environment, our working environment, you know, education on food and everything, we had to, you know, I'm so glad now. Look, at the time I thought, wow, this is a bit intense. But looking back now, I'm so glad that they did that, because they want to know that the dog's going into an environment that supports its health and happiness. So, but these are the questions really that everyone should be asking. I think a question everyone should ask, like, what do you get from your pet? You know, how much happiness, how much joy do you get from that pet? And then ask the question on the back end of that. Once you've answered that, which will be a positive response, no doubt, ask yourself on the back end of that, so what do I give my dog back in support of that? You know, and if that answer is nothing, then, you know, you really need to start looking at this research, start looking at what we can provide and do something about that.
I mean, Libby, that's a critical side of things. It is very much a partnership in these systems. We've talked obviously about dogs, but let's talk about cats. I mean, I know the fashion for taking your cat for a walk seems to have kind of gone slightly, although I still know a number of people who actually do that. Presumably it's the same thing with a cat and a dog, and well, any sort of life form that we're actually working with, even if it's a hamster.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we need to look at kind of the needs of our pets. You know, we need to be providing for those. And, you know, like small furries and rabbits, you know, so many rabbits, unfortunately, are kept solitary, you know, in hutches and so forth. They need companionship too. You know, you're saying about, you know, your goldfish, you know, they need enrichment in their tank. So yes, our cats and our dogs are certainly kind of, you know, uppermost in our mind. They're kind of very commonly kept pets, and we know we need to kind of provide them with great enrichment. But yeah, let's not forget our little pets as well.
Well, yeah, I say basically Spotty the goldfish, he lived for 14 years actually.
Yeah,
so
wow.
It's good stuff from that point of view. Anyway, Ollie, in terms of this particular aspect, of course, finding out further information, where would you point people?
Yeah, and all you've got to do is go to the Purina website, purina.co.uk. So there's loads of information on there, loads of education, and also some amazing products that, you know, I've am definitely invested in with Murphy. So
And Libby, do you have any particular pets yourself, or is it a case of no, I treat them, I don't actually keep them?
Oh no, I've always had pets, and at the moment Bobo, and his actual proper name is Joseph, but Bobo is a 14-year-old Staffy, a rescue dog, and certainly plays a huge part in our lives.
Well, again, clearly the old line about being true to one's pet and they'll be true to you kind of is maintained throughout on this particular aspect. Ali Ollerton, of course, from Channel 4's SAS Who Dares Wins, huge thanks. Send our best wishes, obviously, to Murphy the Labrador. How's he doing these days?
Yeah, he's good. He's just at my feet, actually. Got his eye down the drive. He's the defence mechanism for the house. So, yeah, he's good.
I had a feeling he was actually there. It's the all-seeing eye of radio. That's where I'm just pointing out the whole notion that he's around. So important to give him a shout-out. And vet extraordinaire Libby Sheridan, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And may your pets also always be happy.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Happiness hit her like a train on a track. Coming towards her, stuck still, no turning back. She hid around corners and she hid under.
run fast.